Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, we're going to have a Super Bowl prop bet show. Frank B., an Advantage sports bettor, and Anthony Curtis, an all-around Advantage guy, are our guests. Gentlemen, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey, guys. Nice to be here.
Thank you.
538.com, which is a pretty decent statistical site, published on January 26th that in the 15 New England Patriot playoffs game where they had not faced their opponent previously in the same year, the Patriots are 15-0. Not so coincidentally, they have not faced the Eagles this year. Is this a nonsense statistic, or is there some meat there, in your opinion?
Well, you know, any of these short-term statistics that get cited prior to the Super Bowl, I mean, they have 2 weeks to fill up, and they're going to throw everything out there. I don't think, given their overall win percentage, I don't think it's that big a deal that a team that wins close to 80% of their games goes 15-0. It's not that big a deal. But, you know, you're going to hear them over and over. Like, you know, the most popular one that's going to be out there in the next week is the fact that, for example, in a seven-game sample, seven Super Bowls, coached by Belichick, quarterback by Brady, they haven't scored a point in the first quarter. So they're going to throw that out there, and that fuels a lot of, you know, slow start discussion and all that kind of thing. So whatever it is that they can grab at as far as a stat for the Super Bowl, most of it's short sample. That's the nature of football. But that particular one, I don't, you know, they're a good team. They go on runs where they win 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 all the time.
All right.
So wait, how does that apply to betting? Right? So because they're throwing, I mean, do you think that's a statistic that the non-sharp bettor is going to actually pay attention to and go make bets based on that?
Well, all it really suggests is that you should bet on the Patriots, right? And they're the favorite in the game. And I don't know if it's, you know, hey, it's another check mark in their column or whatever, that a team that's unfamiliar with them, I guess is the way you would interpret it. They don't seem to do so well against Belichick. But, you know, again, I think it all goes back to what is the subset that you're dragging it from? You're dragging it from this is a team that wins more games per year than any other team in the league. So.
Right. No, I just mean, is the public going to overbet because of this and therefore lead you to lean more toward the dog?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, it's another check in the column. If you were on the fence, maybe that pushes you a little bit, but I don't think it's going to create a lot of steam or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, every year when they have the Super Bowl, especially, or they get into the playoffs or any of the games, I mean, any of the sports, you have all these talk shows with so many things going on. And I listen to them because, you know, you never know what you're going to pick up. Maybe I don't like the radio station that's on that day or, you know, whatever. And I just think to myself, you guys are just coming up with every single thing you can do, and whatever's important to some degree has been baked into the line. You know, that's the one thing that I keep saying is, okay, so that's so you're the only one who knows it and the bookmaker doesn't. You know, you would assume that an important stat like this would be already cooked into the line and it wouldn't make that big of a difference in terms of your betting.
Yeah, but you're always looking for things that the public overreacts to, but maybe that's cooked into the line too. They're going to the bookmakers already know that they're going to overreact. And
well, you're right. Yeah, you're right on that. I mean, that's why sports betting is one of the beatable games. You know, I mean, there's only a few of them: blackjack, video poker, sports betting, and it's because of that, because you're playing not so much really against the lines maker as you are against the general public. And so, sure, that, you know, it's important from that standpoint.
You know what? Along those lines, you know, right off the bat, you have some things that get thrown out there, and sometimes they can be deceptive. And you know, the Patriots' defense, for example, in this game, if you remember at the beginning of the year, the first four games, they were everywhere. We're saying this is the worst, not only the worst Pats defense in recent memory, one of the worst defenses ever, because what happened is they faced four really good teams in a row. They had a little bit of injury issues, and they got involved in some shootouts. And even, you know, after that point, they improved dramatically, statistically. And I have to say it that way, statistically, because when it comes to talking about the Patriots, they're known for playing smarter than the average team. They go about things away, and sometimes it doesn't translate to statistics. And one that I can quote right now is that the Patriots are dead last in yards allowed per drive. And this goes back to the defense and the theory that they're – not the theory, the perception that they have basically an inferior defense. They're number 32, which means they allow more yards per drive than any other team in the league. Now you have to ask yourself, is that relevant? How much weight do I give that? Well, the statistic that I give more weight to is points per drive. They're number six. So now that's a big flip. You're the worst in the league at giving up yards per drive, but you give up the sixth fewest points in the league. Why is that? Well, you could just go to the defense and say, well, they just play a more intelligent brand of defense. They realize that every yard is not worth the same based on where you are on the field. But, you know, when they go on a run where they didn't allow 17 or more points for like 8 games in a row, you realize you cannot take the statistics that are cumulative and just all of a sudden assume that is the dominant statistic that shows you the value of this, in this case, the defense. And, you know, I always like to use this example that goes back several years. It's the FIU example. In college football, at the end of the year, it was the last week, and I was getting ready to make lines for the games or whatever, and I came to the FIU game, and Florida International, I go, wow, and they were either number two or number three in all of college football, 120 whatever teams, in pass defense. By the way, they, you know, listed pass defense, which was cumulative yards allowed. So I go, wow, this doesn't make any sense. And the reason it didn't make any sense is Florida International lost every game that year. They're the number two team in the nation pass defense graded that way, but they lost every game. Why is it? It's because that stat doesn't really mean much, because when you're losing by 20 points at the half, there isn't much reason to pass against you in the second half. So when you start to look at some of these cumulative statistics to analyze either the props or anything else, you got to keep in mind, is this really the best way to view it? That's where all these, you know, analytic sites start to come in and start to fill a void, give you a better barometer to judge things by.
Okay. Basic strategy, betting props. Who would be some of the more interesting players for New England that we ought to look at when we're doing that?
Well, excluding Gronk for now, because everybody's, you know, wondering if he's going to play. Obviously, he's a huge favorite to play, but we're going to assume he's playing. Then it would have to be the running backs for New England, because in the receiving core, you know who you have. You have Gronk, you have Amendola, you have Brandon Cooks, and but in the backfield, they are so deep back there. Now, I'm going to give you a thing to illustrate how deep they are. New England this year has four guys that they've rotated in various times, various portions of the season. Each of those four guys has a game where they scored multiple touchdowns. So you have four different running backs. Each of them have a multi, you know, like a big game. And I doubt that there are any teams in the NFL that have three running backs that have done that, and very few that have two. So trying to determine who it is going to be the bell cow in this game is, I'm not saying it's impossible to know, because you definitely have leans, and you know, all indications it's either going to probably be Deion Lewis with James White as a complimentary guy. But, you know, you have Burkhead and Gillislee also in the mix. And those, determining how much volume those guys get, how many touches they're going to get, you need that type of information to do a lot of these props, like how many Patriot receivers will catch a pass in the game, how many of them will run the ball in the game, the distribution in the backfield of carries. So the backfield is the biggest unknown as far as distribution goes, and I have to think that James White, who everybody remembers last year, he easily could have been the MVP in the game. He had just six carries, but that was the second most on the Patriots. But he had 14 receptions. That's a ton. I don't know. I think it might have been a record. That might be a Super Bowl record, 14 receptions. He scored two rushing touchdowns. He had one receiving touchdown. And then he also had the most important play up to that point, which was the two-point conversion that cut the lead from, I guess it would have been 28, it would have cut it to 28 to 20. Now, if he fails on that conversion, game's over. Because now it's 5 minutes to go in the game, and they are down by more, they're down by two scores. They can't just catch up with another touchdown and two-pointer, which they ended up doing. So, I mean, that guy could have been the MVP. Now, to think that Belichick is not going to make him a significant portion of the, you know, touches in the backfield, it's not the way that he's going to be in the mix. It's just, I guess the question is, how much is he going to cut into Deion Lewis, who has been the primary guy going down the stretch? He's had his best games in the last six games. So it's not a terrible position for the coach to be in, but when it comes to betting the props, you got to make a determination. Is this guy going to get average number of touches, or are we going to see a little bit of a swing here towards a little more James White and a little bit less Deion Lewis?
So those were a lot of good questions. Do you have any answers that you might suggest our listeners bet one way or the other?
Sure. That's what I was wondering. I was sitting here going, well what's going to happen?
Okay, so when you take a look at New England and the way they approach a game, they like to attack an opponent's weakness or shy away from their strength. Philadelphia's run D is definitely better than their pass D, so I'd expect a higher volume of passes, which means more passes to the running backs, which means probably Deion Lewis. I wouldn't be too anxious to be betting him over on rushing yards, or that matter for any of the running backs, carries, rushing yards, any of those, because I think a lot of those rushes are instead going to be short passes. So answer to your question, which way to look, because a specific bet is just difficult to pin down, but you know, you'd be looking to fade rushing attempts, rushing yards by the New England running backs, and probably if you're looking to bet some overs, you know, look at the running backs and see if you can find yourself a little bit of value on a good number on receptions and maybe even yardage.
All right. So the leading rusher for New England Super Bowl last year is playing this year too. He hasn't been mentioned yet. How is he going to factor into this game?
Okay, yep. So the leading rusher last year for New England in the Super Bowl was LeGarrette Blount, who is now a Philadelphia Eagle. And he pretty much, I'm not saying he solely got the blame for the way things went in the first half where they're down, it was 28-3. But the running game wasn't working. He ended up 11 carries, 31 yards, and at halftime, they made a decision. We're not going to run the ball much, if at all, going forward. We're going to pass the ball, and that's what they did, and that's how they caught up. And so Blount was sort of the one guy that didn't have a good game, you know, but they did win. So they got changed personnel. Blount ends up on Philadelphia, where he is the main guy to start the season. As it stands right now at this point, he has more than double the amount of carries as the next running back on the roster. But midseason, the Eagles saw fit to say, you know, we're going to go get a guy who we think can tote it 20 times, has a little more breakaway ability. They went to and got Jay Ajayi from Miami. And Ajayi's been the guy down the stretch. Even though he was a guy in Miami who more than half his games had 20-plus carries, comes to Philly, he's only getting about 13 or 14 a game, but that's still a lot more than Blount's getting. So now when you got LeGarrette Blount going into this game, he's going, wow, man, how many chips can I carry on my shoulders? You know, I got a chip against my former team. I got a chip against the fact that last year I didn't look so good in the Super Bowl. I'm supposed to be the guy here in Philadelphia, but now they bring this other guy in here, you know. I think you know, if he's given the opportunity, LeGarrette Blount is ready to make some kind of statement here. And I think psychologically, the Eagles probably give him the ball around the goal line, try to get him in the end zone. That's the kind of guy he is, a goal line back. And that, you know, probably will get him going and get some positive energy, both for the backfield and the Eagles. But he's an interesting guy because you can get him cheap on, yes, you know, like really score a touchdown, because his touchdown rate, if he were the guy, should be much greater than that. But he's like plus 220 to score a touchdown, which means, you know, you only got to score a third of the time and you're going to make some money.
So you think that would be a good bet?
It's not a bad way to go. If it's certainly there's value versus historically, his touchdown rate per, you know, how many games he scores in, and given the situation, and you can put factor in the situation a little here. I think the coaches realize if we can get Blunt into the end zone, you know, hey, he's gonna react really well, and he's the one guy on the team that can go to his teammates and say, listen, I play with these guys. We can beat these guys. You know, we're gonna. You know, he's probably an important guy to get really emotionally involved in the game.
That's an interesting recommendation, because that goes against essentially basic strategy, which is to go with no. You know, I mean, basic strategy really with props, of, you know, and most is under a no, correct? I mean, the public likes to go the other way, lion's shade the other way. So, you know, it's interesting that you would have a yes recommendation here.
Okay, so in that same vein, a bet that I did make, which is a peripheral way of betting I guess yes on Blunt, or thinking that he has a greater chance than the odds suggest, is one of the bets I made opening night at the Westgate was who will score first. Deion Lewis was plus $1.20 against Jay Ajayi. Now Deion Lewis is the primary scorer for the Patriots this year, especially out of the backfield. He's got 7, 8, 9 touchdowns, something like that. It's about the, you know, one every other game, and Jay Ajayi has 2 since he joined the Eagles, and about I think he has 4 on the year, so he's not the, so they're assuming that Jay Ajayi now takes center stage and lead role as far as goal line opportunities, and I don't agree at all, especially with the Blunt factor, you know, and Deion Lewis. You know, getting him at plus money when every indication is that he's a better touchdown scorer to begin with, I thought that was a decent bet.
So you're saying that opportunities for the Eagles, they'll go to Blunt before they'll go to Ajayi?
I think so, yeah. I think that, you know, not only because I think it's the right call on the goal line, because Jay Ajayi has never been a goal line kind of, you know, guy to power in for 1 or 2 yards, and Blunt is, but just, you know, hey, let's get Blunt in. Let's get Blunt involved here. Let's get him engaged. And, you know, getting plus money on the other side, it's basically I'm betting against Jay Ajayi.
See, and another thing here, too, is, you know, interesting to me, when I watch Frank, you know, you'll notice and the listeners will notice that he's doing all the talking here. You know, he's a guy that does these things. I work with him. We do things together. But it's interesting the way that he plays off of different things, too. And I when I listen to him talk, that's what I pick up from it, is that these things aren't always just straight up like black and white. You look at something like this and say, look, you know, this gives me a lead on something else. Thinking something's going to happen here, you don't have to make that bet directly, and you can find other ways to get around it and get that into your game plan.
Yeah, but you know, the bottom line is I did bet a yes. I did take him yes plus, you know, I did recommend taking him yes at better than plus $2.
Most years there are prop bets cross sports where something to do with how many points LeBron James scores versus something in the game. Are there any interesting ones of those this year?
Yeah, I find that the cross sport props are good for a couple of reasons, and one is that the nature of prop betting in Super Bowl week in Vegas is that, you know, it's the one and only time that you can bet anything really prop related. You have a couple places that put up a few every week, but then Super Bowl gets here and it's just an avalanche, and that avalanche comes for these bookmakers with no frame of reference, both personally, in other words, they haven't been making lines all year on this stuff, and nothing to bounce their numbers off of, because they go first. Offshore does not have their numbers up, and they're starting to go up, but they're not up there, so they can't say, well, here's what I think it is. Well, what does Pinnacle have? Well, what does Chris have? They can't do that. They're making it in the blind, and just based on what they've done in the past and, you know, how competent their odds makers are. And at the Westgate, they're the ones that are posting the line first, so they're taking the most risk as far as, you know, the thing, but they're very good at it, and it's hard, you know, going into the week, you show up, you're all prepared to go, and you're chomping at the bit, and then when those lines go up and you don't see things that jump off the page, you say, well, maybe I better wait, take a few bets, and see what materializes over the next few days. So, I mean, that's the way I've been approaching it.
Were there any that jumped off the page this year?
For the cross sports, there were. You see, that's the one bet that people show up, they're ready to bet. They're not ready to bet those. And the reason is they don't know what the other side of the bet is going to be. They don't know who's going to be paired against Tom Brady passing attempts. They don't know, you know, they don't know, is it going to be LeBron James points plus rebounds? Is it going to be, you know, a fourth round golf score? So those are the ones that when they put the lines up, you can, you actually aren't at a disadvantage if you're not first in line, because you have to go and sit down and start jamming, figure out, okay, what should the line be for this? Nobody else has a line for it either. So those ones sort of sit unbet while everybody hits all the other stuff. So yeah, so when it, a lot of the, they were very heavy on basketball this year, but they were also heavy on Vegas nights. And there's quite a bit of soccer in there too, since soccer in Europe is played early in the morning, and they can pretty much take bets all the way through Saturday night on that one. But they're sort of the way I've been leaning these days, the cross sports, because I know that nobody can get a head start. That everybody's got to start as soon as they see what it is, make a line, and then get to the window.
So you mentioned there were some basic strategy ideas in dealing with those cross sports.
Yeah, well, one big one is that when you have a bet like one bet I made was LeBron James points, rebounds, and assists. They pitted that one against the total number of points scored in the Super Bowl, which is basically the total in the game. And from doing basketball props, I know that LeBron should be anywhere from 42 to 44 and a half PAR. They call it points, assists, rebounds. And everybody knows that the line on the game is 48, 48 and a half. So that seemed, you know, like they were taking a look at the game that LeBron's going to play on Sunday and saying, well, we expect to have him a good game. It's the only explanation I have for it. But anyway, it's a head start on a bet. But then another aspect that you should always factor in is LeBron is one individual. And an individual can get hurt. An individual can come out of the game for game flow reasons. Hey, we're way ahead. We're way behind. He's in foul trouble. The team, his opponents, they're not going to get hurt. They're playing the entire 60 minutes. There is no way around it. They're getting their full, you know, they're going, it's going nine innings for them. And so that's another one. You know, you're sort of free rolling there that something happens to the basketball player, to the individual, that gives you like a gimme on that bet.
So in this case, with this particular wager, it's like what I just brought up earlier. You're kind of, it's almost a derivative, you know. So if you're betting most points to be the game points, you're actually getting that over at 42, around, you know, as an average price, as opposed to the 48.
Well, actually more like 44. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at 42, 44, whatever, as opposed to the 48 or the 48 and a half or whatever you're going to end up with. They used to do that. I mean, we hear that for years. If you want to bet, you know, the big favorite, but you don't want to lay the price, maybe bet on their quarterback to win the most valuable player, you know, of the game, because quarterbacks are so likely to. You know, there's just a lot of these sort of derivative off moves that can be made this way.
Now, if there was a prop, say, of the total number of points by the Toronto player DeRozan versus the shortest field goal. So if you saw that prop, how would you analyze it?
Yeah, we talked about that before we went on the air. This is another one I made. It was the prop reads, what will there be more of? DeMar DeRozan points or the distance of the shortest made field goal in the game. And the disclaimer is there has to be at least one made field goal. So if there's no field goals, the bet is no action. And the interesting thing about it is that the range of results for each entry on that bet varies greatly, because DeMar DeRozan, I mean, theoretically could score 0 points. Okay. But
you mean 0 yards?
No points. He's a basketball.
Oh, it's points?
Player.
Well, the basketball side, on the basketball side.
He'll definitely have 0 yards.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
He's going to have 0 yards, but the bet is actually yards plus points. So, they just put that in there to be deceptive. But DeRozan, his range certainly theoretically can stretch all the way down to zero. But realistically, he's, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16, that's a bad game for him. But he does have those on occasion. And then a slightly greater amount of those 17, 18, 19. The problem with it on the low end is that you can only kick a field goal that's so short. I believe it's 19 yards, like what the old extra point used to be. And on those occasions when both entries run bad, so to speak, and DeRozan gets, put it this way, DeRozan's drawn dead unless he gets at least 18. Anything 18 or less, he's, you know, he can't win. He's locked out. So the distribution of the two are so different that I think there's some inherent advantage to the field goal because of the clustering of the unders are so tightly bunched around 23, 24, 25, 26 on that bet. That's very, you know, very common. And DeRozan's results on the under are more spread out. So, and on the high end, I don't think there's really any advantage that DeRozan has, you know, conversely. So, you know, there's going to be times when, you know, they kick a 44-yard field goal and that'll be it for the game. And, well, he's going to have a tough time beating that, you know, because now that becomes the shortest field goal. So I think the element of the difference in the ranges there gives that bet. I mean, it's not, I could be entirely wrong, but the way I look at it, it seems like I got the best of it there because my low doesn't go as low as his low.
Is this a Westgate bet?
It's a Westgate bet, something
that people can get at.
Yeah, because they moved it after I bet it. I think it's all the way up to when I was there yesterday. It was like now the field goal is -3.5.
So how often will these show up that people might be able to find this elsewhere? I mean, considering they've got lots of outs, let's say that they can bet offshore and things like that, how often are they going to be able to maybe run across this somewhere else?
Well, fortunately, the Westgate is the most copied place that there is. So a lot of places, they don't make all these lines. They just go and they grab the Westgate sheet, which is the reason they delay it by about 48 hours putting it out, because they don't want the sportsbook guys from around town come grabbing it Thursday night and just slapping them up. And when they put out the sheet, they use the line that's there after the first hit. And I believe the sheet says 1.5. So it's after I bet it, they moved it to 1.5 or whatever. And now, if somebody copies it, they'll probably copy 1.5, which isn't a bad bet. So, but they are the most copied place. So if anybody's going to copy props, they're going to copy them most likely from Westgate. So, I mean, certainly it's out there at other places.
All right. We're talking to Frank B. and Anthony Curtis on Super Bowl prop bets. We're only about halfway done for today. We're going to take a brief commercial break. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In February, there will be the $600,000 Crazy Cupid's Money Madness. There will be two casino-wide progressives going all the time. One will start at $10,000 and must be hit before $25,000. In addition to the lucky winner, anyone playing when this jackpot goes off receives $25 in free play. The smaller jackpot begins at $1,000 and must be hit prior to $2,500. The smaller jackpot averages going off three times a day. On Monday, February 19th, President's Day, there will be double points all day for video poker players. That means 0.6%. Midnight to midnight, no limits. Slot and reel players receive five times points, which means 1.5%. The fifth week of free video poker classes this semester on Tuesday, February 8th, beginning at noon in the Silverado Lounge, is 9-6 Double Double Bonus Ultimate X 10 Play. This is a 10 coins per line game where your multipliers this hand depend on what scores you received last hand. Multipliers range from 1x, basically meaning nothing, to 12x if you get a full house. The variance of this game is quite high, and so is the return. You have a theoretical advantage 24/7, and even more so during multiple point days, where you just may have to show up 8 hours early to get a seat. The classes are free, and if you're at least 21 years of age, you're welcome. Silverado Lounge is the first one you come to when you reach the casino from the parking garage elevators. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. One of the games we haven't spoken about recently is Super Triple Play. This is a 6 coin per line game where you receive bonuses on the quads and straight flush when you bet the 6th coin. In Double Double Bonus, for example, all quads receive double value and the straight flush goes from 250 to 700. The increase in the value of the quads doesn't affect strategy a whole lot. But the big increase in the straight flush generates a lot of strategy changes. If you're going to play this game, it's a smart idea to take a look at the strategy deviations before you can begin. These are easily calculated using the Video Poker for Winners or other sources. All right. We are back with Frank B. and Anthony Curtis. Is there any value on the rushing yards for the quarterbacks?
Well, this year that's not one that I'm all that hot on, because I think they lined it more. They were willing to make it a really low number. And in years past, whenever you had quarterbacks that didn't rush for very much, their medians versus their averages tended to be pretty disparate, because just one game where a quarterback breaks one off and rushes for 25 yards, not 25, but 15, 20 yards, whatever, that's going to significantly impact his average when, for the most part, he just stays in the pocket and does kneel downs at the end of the game. And so you'd see lines like 4.5, 5.5 yards, when in reality, he only exceeded that once or twice all year, but he accumulated enough in those couple of games to make that average look like that. But his median was like, 14 unders, two overs. And I think they've learned enough that that they're not afraid to make it low, even almost zero. This year, both quarterbacks are lined 1.5 under right now after the early action. And I made them both zero. I think the line should be zero. So, I mean, you got the one, and it is worth something. It's probably worth a bet. But that 1 yard, for him to land exactly on positive one, he's going to have to go forward first, because, there's kneel downs. Every kneel down's a negative one. So it's not like you get a free rush, but you might. You might, like, if he rushes for 2 yards, you might get a kneel down, put you back on one. But I think it's close enough to where it's no better than any other decent bet out there. It's okay. I mean, if you get it, you don't have to pay more than $1.25. You could take either quarterback under 1.5.
Which is interesting when you listen to the pros who are willing to do this, that I will bet under 1.5, and I'm like, I really got a bonanza if I get under 3, that sort of thing. And that's where the edge comes in. The average player will look at that and go, there's no way I'm doing that. I'm not doing that, right? I'm betting that bet. I see 3 on a quarterback or 1.5. I'm betting over, because something has to happen. I know, because when I started and I know what I was doing just that, going, well, he's got to do something, right, to get 2 yards. And it doesn't happen, So that's what I take out of these discussions, is like, you really have to have an open mind to the things that seem non-intuitive, but they are accurate.
When Michael Shackelford used to do these shows for us, he always suggested betting no safety, no overtime, no 2-point conversions, no 3-point margin of victory. These were bridge jumper bets of sorts, where you had to bet a lot to win a little, but they almost always won. If your standard size of winning bet was $1,000, this meant you may have had to bet $8,000 on the no safety. Unfortunately, Shaq ran into a buzzsaw where they had something like 4 safeties in 7 years. When you lose bridge jumper bets, it can make it very hard to climb out of the hole. So, on these bets, Frank, do you generally include them in your portfolio? And if so, for how much of a standard bet size?
Well, I guess the question you have to answer first is, what is my bankroll for betting on Super Bowl props? Because there's two ways to structure a bet. And the first one is the way the vast majority of sports bettors do. A unit for them is how much they intend to win. So you'll lay 550 to win 500. You'll lay 1,100 to win 1,000, or 110 to win 100. I'm pretty sure mathematically that the correct way to do it is to balance risk, is to base your risk amount. Make that your unit size. So in other words, we'd be betting all kinds of odd amounts. We'd be betting 500 to win 454 at minus 110 or whatever. But I think when it comes to stuff like this, like, for example, the safety is minus 900 now early in the betting cycle. I mean, you're laying 9 to win 1, or you're laying 1. I mean, it depends how you look at it. I mean, should you be betting, if you want to win $1,000, should you be betting $9,000 if you have a finite bankroll? Or should you be betting 1,000 to win 111 or 100, whatever it works out to? I mean,
well, it really depends on what you think your edge is on the bet,
right?
Right? And then you You know, we have Kelly to tell us how much is the right bet, and maybe you bet half Kelly. You know, you got to have some fudge factor in there because you don't know exactly what your edge is. You can only make your best assumption about what your edge is.
Yeah, well, and in this particular bet, it does hold a healthy hedge historically over the, you know, when you consider the frequency of safeties. I mean, the true line is supposed to be somewhere in the neighborhood of minus 1,400. And there comes another problem for persons that are sort of not completely familiar with how these big money lines work, because some people will look at minus 900 versus minus 1,400 and go, wow, that's gargantuan difference. But when you look at it as far as the frequency of occurrence, and I like to always, how often am I going to lose the bet? Okay, so you lay minus 900, and if that's really the true no vig line, you're going to lose 1 out of 10, 10% of the time. Now, if you lay 1,400, or you have a bet presented to you that's minus 1,400, that's, you're going to lose it 6.7% of the time, about. So it's not this huge thing. That it's the fact that that's the way money lines operate. And you say, well, what's the difference between minus 1,400, the true line we think it is, and minus 900, the price we're paying? Well, it turns out it's a decent. It's, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 30%. But people have a hard time grasping that because the numbers don't add up because they're not close to zero, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like to, when people ask me this question, and they always ask about the safety, guys who don't bet a lot, should I bet the safety? How much is it worth? I try to tell them, imagine a bet that the true price should be minus 200, and you get it for even money. That's about the same ballpark as far as advantage-wise goes. Advantage. Now, the variance is a whole different deal. Okay? The variance is different. But that is the amount, and if you're basing your bets on Kelly, the percent of your advantage, and there you go.
So if we were going to bridge jump and bet the no safety, should we bet it early in the cycle or late, and why? Yeah.
It's certainly a bet that the participants in the bet, in other words, the bettors, the two sides, they're pretty well defined. Small players will take the yes, plus 550 right now, whatever, you know, something like that. And, you know, the reason is if you're a $100 bettor and you come in, are you really going to bet $100 to win 11 on no safety? No. You're going to bet 100 to win 550. And it's pretty much 100% of the bettors that are small bettors are going to bet yes on the safety. So you wait. You wait till the crowd gets to town. You wait till they get a chance to start betting. And recent history helps you because we've had four safeties in recent years. And some of them highly publicized because they came early in the game. One time was the first play of the game. So, and you know, it's a basic strategy that goes across other events that have this type of money line. I mean, Kurt, you understand that when it comes to boxing and UFC, and if you got a huge favorite, I mean, what do they bet? Who bets what?
Well, everybody likes to bet the dog.
Yeah, I mean, every small bettor is going to bet the dog.
Yeah, and the pros are typically going to get their best lay price that they can get. You know, that's just sort of how it works. But, I mean, I would add to this, there's like another element to this, and this is the perfect example. When you're talking about gambling of all sorts, and certainly in sports wagering, it's just your own utility, you know, meaning what does it mean to you? The pro bettors, they will make these bets. I mean, they will lay 10-1. They will lay 9-1 on something where they feel they've got a good edge. It doesn't really bother them. They've got such a big portfolio that they're doing it. It's harder for other people who are more casual. Even if you tell them you've got an edge, it's tougher to do. And even if you understand it, it's tougher to do. I mean, for years, when we were going, 40, 45 Super Bowls in a row with no overtime, and I'd go to a Super Bowl party, and Richard would be at that party, and, you know, a lot of guys would be there. Bob was there sometimes, and Frank had been there, and everybody in the room just about had no safety and no overtime, because these were just all pros who did it. You know, me, I was betting my money in other places. I wasn't betting a lot of money on sports. So the whole room had it, but I didn't have it because it wasn't within my portfolio.
Like you said, what is your bankroll for bets at the Super Bowl? Let's say you have $100,000 that you want to get into action on these props.
It eats up a lot of it.
Well, yeah. Do you really want to put $9,000 of it on that one bet when there are so many other bets that you might find that have an equal or better edge, and your money can be, you know, better distributed or whatever.
Right. And you know, there's that, you know, the fact that the casual bettor isn't able to isolate those other bets, but they know this one. You know, it's this one because that's, every guy that comes into town that's a blackjack player, whatever, that I know, they go, oh, where am I going to bet the safety at? Because that's all they know. But they know it's an edge, and they're willing to take that risk. Now, there's also a psychological aspect to this bet for a guy with a lot of volume, and I happen to be one of them. In other words, you can torpedo 2 weeks worth of work
with one
bet. You could go 45-30 and be a big loser. I don't know if that, you know, that this one thing can do a lot of damage. Not monetarily, because you can handle that. You know, everybody, we're all big boys. We can handle, we make a bet, we know I can handle losing it. But psychologically, like, I put all that effort into the week. I got all these bets. I got reams of things. I spent countless hours running around. And the guy took an intentional safety because they were up by six, you know, at the end of the game. And I'm like, like, some guys will say, you know, only so much of that. And I'm one of those guys. I'll wait. If you throw me a price that I can't turn down, like it was like three or four years ago after they had two in a row, we were getting prices under minus 500. Yeah, I had to take some of that. And I lost. You know, I lost. when you take a leap, I lost. So I'm behind lifetime on safety bets, actually. You know, because of that recent run.
But that's that whole utility thing. It's like, you know, you guys all bring up valid points on why not to do this. And at those parties, I remember a couple of them that were very close and, you know, driving towards overtime. And I'm looking at some of the biggest bettors in the world, guys that really don't flinch at $100,000 bets, just sweating. I'm not going to name any names here, but I mean, you know what I mean? Literally sitting there sweating and looking up at me, and I'm like, I didn't bet it. You know, so there's a utility aspect
or
to
this. 3-point margin of victory is...
That's one's actually worse than the safety, I think, psychologically. That and the overtime, because you can sort of see it coming. Like when a game is heading for the three, it's not like all of a sudden the safety happens. Oh,
so
I lost
for
it.
Longer.
Yeah, but that one... The margin of victory by three, you can see it coming. It sets up, you know, one team misses an extra point. Oh, man, it could land on three now. or the overtime, you can just see they keep scoring in uniform amounts where you go, wow, man, this thing could go overtime, you know, and you got that dread about you. Because, you know, the amount of money that you're going to win on it pales in comparison to what you're going to lose. You know, you're going to feel that loss. So that psychologically, I think the overtime and the margin of victory, other ones like that you can see coming.
2-point conversions.
See, that one's one that just happens like that, you know.
One of the things Shackelford always used to bet too was the under field goals. And then he, I guess, lost that a number of years in a row and got off of it. Do you have a feeling about the over-under on field goals?
Well, I guess you like the fact that you have Belichick involved because he's a guy that on the right portion of the field will go for it on fourth and short and sometimes fourth and not so short. You know, he's not going to always go default field up. He can kick a 53-yarder. We'll go for it. If he thinks it's worth it, he's going to go for it, even though his field goal kicker is capable of making it from that distance. So you got that going for you. But, you know, the field goals, they're proper. 3.5 under. I mean, how hard is it to make that line? It's been for 20 years that's been the line on field goals in a game one way or the other.
Well, but his point was that the average number is under that, right? The average number of field goals per game.
Yeah, there were blowout games in the Super Bowls for a great many years, and I think that led to a lot of that. You got one team at certain points saying, we're not kicking field goals anymore. Because the game's out of, you know, we can't catch up by kicking field goals.
See, this is funny. For so many years, even though knowing sports betting could be beaten, I was out of it. I didn't partake. And the reason I didn't is because it wasn't black and white. And, you know, I mean, I could look at blackjack and I knew what these percentages were. And I knew exactly if I'm going to play. I could look at video poker and I knew exactly what my return was supposed to be. And I'd hear people talk about this mystical value, you know, with the air quotes here, value. And I'm like, value according to who, what, whom, you know? I mean, it took me a long time to see how sophisticated you could get to start to understand. And a perfect example, a guy asked me last week, he said, who are your guys on? You know, my guys, meaning the guys that I follow. I said, we're on Philadelphia. And he said, can you convince me of that? Why? I'm like, No, I can't. I just know that these guys have done the work and we're on that. And everybody wants rationalization for these things. And in sports betting, it's very difficult because it's very little is black and white. Obviously, there's a lot of shading that can be taken advantage of, but there's very little black and white. So you say, you know, 3.5 is the number. Why would
three
it change?
Three and a half under.
Right. Okay. Why would it, you know, why would it change from one to the next to the next? I mean, certain reasons, yes. But I mean, that's why that number is static, you know, year after year after year, because it's really an imprecise science that can be beaten.
Yeah, and when I say 3.5 under, you know, that's the conventional market price for, like, if I get a line of game and I don't know even know who's participating, you say, give me a field goal. Like, okay, 3.5 under -35. That's what I'm going to say. And I'm going to be right close enough if you incorporate some juice in there that you're not going to get hurt on that for an NFL game. But, you know, the whole thing about perceiving value and being certain, like you say, blackjack, you know this more than anybody, that's my favorite analogy for gambling, because I think it's a great place to learn basic strategies for gambling. And it's so many things you can just say, okay, well, you know, this is how it works in blackjack, and so here's the corollary for this activity that we're looking at.
If you hang out with Frank long enough, you'll get an analogy of blackjack for just about every single episode in life.
But if you hang out with me, life is about video poker, and there's a video poker analogy to all these
things. Life's about hitting the gut shot straight.
Same thing.
But for like trying to establish, like, you know, I want to have some degree of certainty that what I'm doing is right. The thing that I tell everybody at the start, you have to believe in market efficiency. You have to say this market is big enough and is liquid enough that it's going to give me pretty much the right answer. You have to know how to read it. You know, saying that you have the right outs, your right information, you should be able to look at it and say, and that's where you start. You know, when you start betting, you could start betting without knowing one player on one team if you understand market efficiency. And you say, well, I understand what these points are worth, and I understand when we're looking at something that's gone beyond that, now I have a positive play versus the market. And that's how you begin, and that's how you start to build your basic strategy for sports betting.
You mean by finding somebody with a wrong number because they're off the market?
And it's not necessarily wrong. It's just off by enough, or their clientele is just different enough that it makes sense for them.
But it's different than the rest of the market.
Yeah, so
to what your evaluation of the right price is based on the market, you know, your market indicators, what do you use to tell you what the precise line should be? Do you, for example, if I told you there's two lines out there, one of them is at William Hill and the other one's at Pinnacle, which one would you use if you're going to offer a bet to somebody?
Pinnacle.
Okay, so that's where you start.
Yeah,
start
okay,
like
that's
that.
What I meant. Yeah.
All right.
You know, that's what got me into it. I mean, when like I said, it took a while for me to move into sports, and I'm a market efficiency guy. I believe in, you know, the wisdom of markets, the wisdom of crowds, the wisdom of, you know, of the masses. And that's where I see as a starting point is, and then that falls into shopping. You know, now you start getting into if the market says this, and this is what they call the, you know, the quote widely available number, when you can find off situations there, it's a basic strategy move that you look in that direction.
Sure.
We got time for one more question. Every year at Super Bowl props, there are some off the wall props that are very different sometimes. The number, the value in Scrabble of the name of the person who scores the first touchdown or something like that. Do you have any off-the-wall props that you think are interesting this year?
You know, every year they're different, and that's the whole point. They try to come up with something new every year that'll maybe get a little publicity. This year, a lot of it's centered around the Vegas Knights, you know, the hockey team. And they have one I really don't find them that unique this year. I mean, they're just okay, we're going to change the names around and try something there. But they have one where who will be taller, will be the height in inches of the first player to score a goal in that Sunday's Vegas hockey game, or the first player to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl. You know, it's not like a difficult task to look those things up. It's just what weight do you give the players and the distributions. And, you know, the best you can come up, there's like three or four players on the football side that if any of them score, you got a winner, because nobody in the hockey game, involved in the hockey game, is 6'3 or taller. And you have Alshon Jeffrey, 6'3, Zach Ertz, 6'5, and Gronk, 6'6. So any of those three guys, and they're pretty popular touchdown, you know, they're up on the list as their probability of scoring a touchdown and the first touchdown. But on the low end, like all the Patriots running backs are dudes less than 6 feet tall. They got one guy 6 foot that's not, doesn't play too often, but Deion Lewis is 5'10 or less. James White is 5'10 or less. Rex Burkhead is, you know. So if it comes out of the New England backfield, well, now you're almost a sure loser. And that bet is available at Caesars. And I don't think, when I checked the following day, it hasn't gotten any action. So whoever's evaluated it either has decided that those free rolls on each side sort of cancel each other out, or that there's just no value there. And one more is they had a number of empty net goals in the game, in that particular game. That was plus a half versus Tom Brady interceptions is what it was. And in that case, you have Tom Brady laying a half an interception, which means if he doesn't throw an interception, you've lost. So to me, based on the number of empty net goals that occur in a game, which is certainly less than one, it's basically a bet. Will Brady throw an interception? Okay, and you're getting plus 55 on the yes there. So there is a little bit of value.
What is the average?
Well, the line, of course, there's a line for him to throw an interception, is in the neighborhood of pick, but it's a little bit shaded to the under in most places. So it would be no interception minus 20, yes, even money. So you're talking, you know, like 55% on the no. So it does appear to offer a little bit of value on that on the Brady side of that.
Very good. Thank you, Frank B. Thank you, Anthony Curtis. Thank you, Richard Munchkin. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.